Thank you for honoring us with your presence. And to all of you for coming here this afternoon. The prayer that we offer before the talk is a moment of silence. Thank you for honoring us with your presence. And to all of you for coming here this afternoon. The prayer that we offer before the talk is a moment of silence. I would like to explore with you this afternoon the deepest truth of human existence. When I say that, that may sound a little bit abstract, interesting, but abstract, human existence. And it may sound a little bit philosophical. But this is not a lecture on philosophy. Nor is it a lecture at all. The best way to look upon it is as a meditation. Although somebody is speaking, look upon it as a meditation. So when I say the deepest truth of human existence, it sounds a little bit removed from your everyday concerns. So let's put it in another way. We are here to explore the deepest truth of who you are. Because you are human existence. We are here to explore the deepest truth within yourself. Knowing yourself at the deepest level. A level so deep that knowing yourself and knowing God become one and the same. There are two levels to this talk, if it can be called that. One is the words, and one is the gaps between the words, a certain stillness. I've just pointed this out because it is helpful as you listen to be aware not only of the words but of an underlying field of stillness out of which the words come. Nothing personal. There's a field of stillness that is both within and without. Gaps between the words. A silent space. In between and underlying the words. And simply to be aware also of that dimension. Then listening to these words is more than absorbing information, because there isn't that much information here. It's not an information-based talk. Then it becomes a meditation to just sit here and listen. And the deeper teaching, if it can even be called teaching, is not in and through the words. The deeper teaching lies in the dimension of stillness. Because the moment you acknowledge that underlying dimension, you have accessed a realm within yourself that is deeper than the stream of mind with which most people are identified as themselves. Simply, as we sit here, to acknowledge, to notice, to listen to an underlying stillness, that which acknowledges that in you, that which is able to listen to that dimension, listen not to something, listen to nothing, to nothing, just the act of listening, that in you which is able to acknowledge that dimension, to be attentive to that dimension, is a realm of stillness underneath the stream of mental noise. In other words, the moment you pay attention to that dimension of silence, there is a stillness in you. Because through thought, you cannot pay attention to silence, because thought is noise. So already, although through words we are going to progressively explore the deepest truth of human existence, even as you sit here and follow the words that progressively explore the deepest truth of human existence, that deepest truth of human existence is already emerging in you as you sit here and listen, even now, simply by paying attention to silence through the inner stillness. That is the only way you can notice. The stillness in you notices that. And you have gone beyond the continuous stream of mental noise that for most people is who they think they are. So the answer to the initial question that I asked, I said, let's explore the deepest truth of human existence, the deepest truth of who you are. The answer of that is never really in the future. Not even within the framework of this talk is the answer of who you are beyond the conditioned mind. Never is that answer in the future. It's always now. So our question, what does that mean? The deepest truth of who you are, knowing yourself. Doesn't everybody know themselves already? And most people would say, yes, I know my name and all those things that are associated with my name, things that cling to that initial form identity that my parents have given me when they taught me what my name is, such and such, whatever it may be. First, what's your name? The little child is asked, and is very proud to be able to say his or her name, and the parents say, very good. That's the way human existence goes, and nobody realizes that already through the initial first label, mental label, first identification with a thought, a sequence of sounds, the first limitation, illusory limitation on who you truly are beyond mental concepts, the first limitation has already arisen. You have already entered a prison of conceptualization. It is the beginning of it. But we need to go that way. Humans have to move through that. It would be futile to tell a child, you have no name. Don't identify yourself with a name. That the child has to go through the stage, every human being has to go through the stage where they begin to accumulate experiences, knowledge, labels, words, concepts, all kinds of things, cultural conditioning, personal conditioning through their environment, and these things then cling around the name, and after a few years, gradually a sense of self develops, a me. Even in a small child, it begins to develop when the child says, my toy is bigger than yours. It feels good to the child to strengthen its sense of self through feeling, I have more than you. I know more than you. Or my father is stronger than yours. You can add a bit more to that sense of self. And again, that is a normal process. And so gradually the accumulations continue. And you become an adult, and then you have a certain sense of self based on the conditioning of your mind. That is the mind that never stops. That is the mind that is a continuous stream of thought processes. And the thought processes are strongly connected with the conditioning of your mind. So the stream of thinking, and this doesn't depend on culture, it doesn't depend whether you live on India, in India or in the West. It is the same in every human being. The stream of thinking goes on incessantly, and a lot of that is to do with me and my concerns and my problems and what's going to happen to me. There's a story of me, which is my past. Things have happened to me. things that I have accumulated, the content of my mind, is a kind of story that people like to dwell on, talk to themselves about their story, have a monologue or a dialogue in the head. And so a sense of self develops that is mind-based. And that's again happens to everybody. A sense of self develops that is content-based, content and form-based, a psychological form of me. And for most people, that is who they are. So if you ask them, who are you, they would tell you a little story. It could be, they could keep it brief, they could give you a brief summary of me, or they can make it very long. They can go on for hours, because my story is so interesting and dramatic. Have you got enough time to listen to it? Let me tell you what my story is and what I have suffered, what I have seen, what I have, my triumphs and my victories and my defeats, what people have done to me and all the bad things that I have done. I'll tell you about all of this. And so this is why psychoanalysts make a good living, because there you pay them to listen to you and to the story. And if you want to be thorough in psychoanalysis, you have to go 3 times a week for a few years. And so you tell your story, and as you tell the story of me, more and more layers of complexity become revealed about me. And it's so interesting. And so, after you have completed your course of psychoanalysis, if ever, then the psychoanalyst might tell you, we have come to the end. This, by the way, that's very rare. He will tell you, we have come to the end of our analysis. We have analyzed everything about you, and I will give you the file. It's big. Here it is. You can take it home. This is you. And if then somebody asks you, do you know yourself? You say, oh yes, it's all here. The content of my mind has been analyzed, and here it is in this file, or it might be a computer disk these days. And so I can tell you all about it. And of course, when they say, I know myself, what they really mean is, I know a lot about myself. I know many things about myself, a lot of information, many facts. And they forget who the I is that knows, because all that knowledge is knowledge about. It's form knowledge. You know a lot about your psychological form identity. Not that there's anything wrong with it. Each person moves within a form identity, has a form identity, which is not to be rejected, but to be honored. Part of your form identity is the function that you have in this world, the social function, your profession, whatever you do, your activity, your relationship to other people as a mother, as a father, as the boss. Many other things come into it, your cultural background, your nationality, the nation that you feel you are part of, is part of that conditioning. It is not to be discarded, but also to be honored. You honor the forms that are the content of your mind, you identify with as me. The only thing is, if you only know yourself as those forms, because every form identity exists consists of various roles that people play within that form. And that usually is the limit of people's self-knowledge, plus if they've done psychoanalysis, they know about their childhood and all those things that happened then. So is there more to who you are than the form identity, which has two levels? We've been speaking about the psychological form of me, and of course then there is the physical form of the body. So people identify with the two. There's my physical body, me, and there's a psychological story, and that is the story of me, and that is includes all the conditioning, or the reactive patterns, all those things are in there. The content of the mind is the psychological form of me. So we have the two levels of identification. And sometimes the body can be a very strong identification in certain people. It becomes part also of the psychological form identity. If, for example, your body is very beautiful or your body is very strong, that enhances your psychological form identity. It gives you a feeling that you are stronger, more beautiful than others, and the sense of self becomes enhanced through that. And that can last for quite a while, and it works quite well until you reach, the body begins to grow old, and then the beauty fades. And if that was the main part of your form identity, great suffering starts when the beauty fades that you thought that was me. So the form identity, both physical and even more strongly psychological form, has certain characteristics. And one of the characteristics of form identity is that it never feels complete. It never feels, except for brief moments which turn out to be delusory, never feels really at ease or at peace. It never feels that you are freely and fully yourself yet. Yet is added by the mind, because that's the little escape which says, okay, yes, there is this recurring, almost permanently underlying sense of lack, of insufficiency, and of incompleteness. And many people who are not conscious enough don't feel it directly. It becomes translated into continuous wanting and needing this or that to fill that hole that they feel, to fill that sense of lack and insufficiency with something, to make myself complete in this form identity. And so there is an enormous need in human beings to add more to me, to make me complete. And that is the search, that is the enormous momentum behind human wanting and needing. The Buddha speaks of desire, and again, that's a little bit abstract. At his time, it was a powerful word, perhaps. But desire really is wanting, needing. And then you look for things to add to the accumulated content of mental identifications to complete my sense of self. So you look to, and it's strange, it's a little bit like a, it'll grasp at anything to add to me, whatever it can. And a very common one, of course, is material possessions that I identify with. I have more than you. This enhances my sense of self. I identify with my house. I identify with my car. In a very subtle way, I feel it's an extension of me. The car has become a mind object. And that mind object is used to strengthen, to enhance a deficient sense of self. And for a little while, it works. You feel bigger as you step into your BMW. You have expanded. Your sense of self has grown. And you are more powerful than all those little puny little cars around you. And for a little while, that works. You feel almost you have arrived. And then, before long, it wears off. And then you sit in that car, and it's not that fulfilling anymore. It's just a car. It gets you from A to B. Okay, that wasn't quite it. And then you look to the next thing. And the next thing could be a relationship to complete me. Because the last one didn't work. It didn't complete me. Something went wrong. So you go out and look for it there. The ideal one I'm going to meet one day, I'm looking for the ideal partner that is going to complete my sense of self. And then it happens at times that you find him or her. That means it's called falling in love. And it says, okay, I found you. You are going to complete me. You are going to make me happy. Which you sometimes read in the Lonely Hearts columns, looking for someone to make me happy. What they mean is to make my sense of self complete, to fill that lack that I feel. And so you might get married. And for a while, the illusion is there, just that it was there with the BMW, that now I have arrived. This is when you fall in love. You have this euphoria of completeness. I finally, the story of me has completed itself. I have arrived. I made it. And then comes the honeymoon. And then comes ordinary existence. And all the things that arise in ordinary existence. And sooner or later, this ideal partner fails to live up to the what she had promised when he signed the wedding document, that is to complete you, to make you happy. It's not working anymore. That feeling disappears. And then it comes, oh, that I made a dreadful mistake. It wasn't the right one. He wasn't right. Or you begin to look elsewhere, but in the meantime, you've been looking every day for hundreds of little things to add to me, to enhance your sense of self, all kinds of little things, to whatever, one could make a list of hundreds of things, how that egoic self and mind-made entity looks for little things to add to me, experiences. We can add anything, drugs maybe, to have an experience with that, maybe that. Food, I can add that. It's a psychological need. The body has a limited need for food, but the psychological me has a great need for food, because even through that, it can make itself feel a little bit more complete. A box of chocolate works for an hour or two. And you can see the impulse behind it when people reach into the bag of chips or the chocolate, and there's more. It's not the body really that wants, it's the mind made self that seeks some completion through that. And when the bag of chips is empty, it looks for the next thing. So in many little and big things, there is this enormous need to add to me, and in everywhere, to make myself complete, because it's never, that completeness never lasts. And so people believe that their sense of not having arrived, of not quite having made it yet, of not being truly and fully yourself, people believe that this is their personal problem. They believe that others exist who have made it, because you see the movies, and you see the magazines that show you these glamorous, famous people who apparently, surely, they must have made it. They look so happy in their glamorous surroundings. and the culture tells you that that is the way to go. You can make it, just try harder to have more possessions or more status. That's a big, intangible, but enormous thing to add to oneself. Other people's view of me is an enormous piece, bigger, even can be bigger than the greatest mansion. That need for others to give me their approval, their high opinion. And so there's the need for status in society, for others to tell me that I am great and good enough. And that's an enormous, these are enormous chunks that of identifications that you can add to the deficient sense of self. And for a little while, that also works. And then if you've met any of the famous people that you see in the magazines and films, whatever they, sports, movies, famous this, famous that, people who are told by the surrounding culture and the world that they are special, that they have made it, and they are great role symbols in society. And if you meet them, you will see that underneath the glamorous facade, there is the same sense of deficiency, of it didn't complete them. The whole world telling them that they are great, and deep down they feel this is a big lie. Also, there are famous people who have actually, through that, have seen through the delusion of that, the meaninglessness of this world, which to a large extent is mad, because it's the human egoic mind telling you that you are important. And some people striving a lifetime to add that to their sense of self, to the world, please tell me that I matter. My sense of self depends on it. Please tell me that I am important. And then, of course, only a few are told that. The others are left in limbo and are unhappy there. And those that are told that they are important, they are unhappy there. Not complete. And it happens occasionally that a few of those people who made it rich and famous, they begin to go deeper because they have everything. And they can't possibly think of any more to add to me. Because what can you add when you have everything? Could buy anything, go anywhere, and everybody thinks you are God. And still feel. And so some of those actually see through the delusion and then penetrate to deeper levels of their being. But for many of us, there is always the hope that through this or that addition to me, added content for the mind, the mental identifications, that through that I can complete myself and my life is going to work and finally feel that I have arrived. I'm home. I'm fully myself. And what people don't realize is it is not their personal problem, the fact that they feel that they haven't arrived, that they haven't made it. It is built into the very structure of the mind-made sense of self. That deficiency and sense of lack is inseparable from those mind structures, from that identity. So it is nothing to do with what you could possibly add. Nothing that you add could fulfill you, is the truth. And that is, for spiritual seekers, this is a very subtle point. Because that mindset, which is collectively conditioned, nobody's personal problem, that has an enormous need for more. For more of whatever it may be, more. That mindset is quite deep-seated. It implies, of course, that you have an enormous need for future, because you can. It's only through future, and you're looking into future, where you can get the future, the mind-made self tells you, will enable you to get that. And this is why very few human beings are actually where they are, rooted in the presence of now. They are reaching out in that drive for more. They are reaching continuously. They are being pulled out of now, which is all there ever is, which is life itself. Nothing else ever exists except now. But they are pulled out of this into a mental projection, a psychological future where they are going to complete themselves because they will reach that more there. That's the momentum. And that's how most people live, in that continuous, almost desperate search for being ultimately yourself, finding yourself through more, through future, finding myself through future. Everybody is doing it through looking where you can add more. Where is the more? I need more. And then you become frustrated with the more gross levels of more, and then you move up into the subtle levels of more, where you seek to add, perhaps, spiritual experiences. And a spiritual seeker needs to be very careful and look whether within him or herself the need for more still operates, and then the spiritual search becomes a need to add more to me as spiritual knowledge. Spiritual knowledge is valuable and beautiful as a pointer, but it can become mental content that I identify with as me. Spiritual scriptures and spiritual knowledge is wonderful. This country is the cradle for that. It has got the most beautiful and profound maps or signposts towards who you truly are, to point you to that. And if used rightly, it works beautifully and powerfully. But if used by a mind that is seeking more to add to me, then the very scripture could become a hindrance, because you accumulate maps and signposts. They are beautiful and you carry great knowledge. And in a very subtle way, a spiritual ego could also come in. It's very more subtle than the BMW ego. It's the ego coming back through the back door. And there's a very subtle sense of, I am now more than all those poor little worms who have not yet seen the light. I have studied those things. I have studied with masters. I've been to monasteries, or in the West it's workshops. I've done all those, and there's so much I have. There's a very subtle sense of more, but never enough. Because you feel, well, I haven't quite arrived yet, but I'm already more than all those. All those me are more. It's a very subtle thing. And you have to be very vigilant to see it in yourself. That still, that deep-seated collective mental conditioning, the need for more, flows even into the spiritual search, the spiritual seeking to become fully myself. And again, there's a great psychological need for future, because I seek to complete myself in future, so that the same mindset can operate in that realm also. And so it's good to know that, because once you know it, and you know that the sense of insufficiency or lack is intrinsically linked with that mindset. You can't get out of it no matter what you do. No matter how much you add, it's never enough. Even spiritual knowledge, if it's only an adding of experiences or knowledge, it's never quite enough yet. But the search goes on, the great need for more of me, until you see how it operates in yourself until you see that there's a continuous movement away from what is now, until you see the need for this mind-made sense of self. And this is really lies at the root of that continuous conflict in the world, collectively and personally, the madness of human history. Why is that? Why is human history so insane? 80% of it, look at the 20th century. Incredible. How can humans do this? There must be an enormous dysfunction at the core of the human mind, and this is it. So, because a great need of this mind-made sense of self is actually, in order to continue to feel its sense of self, it needs to create opposition with others, situations and people, because only by fighting against, by having issues with, can it continue to feel its mentally derived sense of self. You need the sense of separation, of me against you. There's a need for conflict and problems built into the mind-made sense of self. It never says that openly. It says, I'm looking for peace, joy and happiness. But then what it says and does is the opposite in many cases.